our speaker this morning, or our coordinator of the speakers or whatever, this morning is Kathy Schuster, a member of our congregation, and she's a longtime UU who lives her principles, who lives our principles every day. It's been so interesting to me to see how she has not only given of her time, but has involved a whole bunch of the rest of us in giving our time and things that enrich our lives as much as the time that we spend. I'm really proud to present Kathy Schuster today.
Good morning, everyone. Well, the worship committee today asked me to talk about service as our prayer. We read that in the affirmation just this morning, as we do every Sunday. And so what does that mean to Unitarians? We provide service in the form of the three T's: time, talent, and treasure. And we see the evidence of that all around us here in our own congregation. But and we know about how some of it extends out into the community. But we thought we might talk today of some of the actual results of this of our service in the form of these three T's. And I'm just going to introduce this, and we hope after the service you will ask questions. We'll leave a little time, because I get a lot of questions, really, questions that are really fun to answer and that involve more of the community a lot of times when they do ask. So today we're going to look at how our service extends beyond our doors into the community, in particular to the local homeless community. We Unitarians find spiritual expression in social action, in trying to make the world a better place for everyone. And for reasons such as dignity and safety of people in shelter, it's often difficult to know whether we're really making a difference there. We can't just drop in and see whether these people are benefiting. So we're going to try to bring that experience here today. And in a few minutes, my co-speaker, Jennifer, is sitting here. Jennifer, she's going to talk about the difference that our treasure makes. The treasure part of our service made a difference to her family when they took shelter at FISA's New Vista, the shelter for families. Her family was more fortunate than some in that the dad, Richard, who's also here, Richard, he had a job when they moved into New Vista. And Jennifer found one soon after. So they were in more need of the services that our treasure provides than actual services that up to you provides, the time and talent. So we'll talk about both aspects of those, and Jennifer will help me with the treasure part. So many local homeless families, when they move in, they're struggling with foreclosure, illiteracy, ex-offender status, domestic violence, substance abuse, single-parent challenges, and other issues, to the extent that they need our other two T's, time and talent. This is where our Up to UU group weighs in. I've noticed that the Up to UU volunteers work hard and they play hard, and a good number of them are away at DeBenneville this weekend, so I won't be able to take one of the rare opportunities I have to acknowledge them in person. But their names are listed in the order of service. All of you have an inset with their names and the names of those who are present here today who are part of the Up to UU Corps of volunteers. If you are here today and your name's listed in the order of service, please stand and let us see who you are. And Gladys, would you please stand too? I didn't list you as an active member of Up to UU, but you really got us all started by connecting us. Please, all of you stand. All of you up to you, you volunteers. Mike's standing to represent Leslie, who has single-handedly doubled our scope of services over the last two or three months. If you stay standing just a minute, up to you, you. Up to you, you helps local shelter residents escape dependency by increasing their access to work. In this order of service, you can see the actual services that each of these volunteers has provided. Our projects include resume writing, teaching computer skills, coaching and interview techniques, tutoring to pass the GED, that's the high school equivalency exam, teaching English as a second language, coaching in daily life skills, for example, how to cook quick meals and balance your home life, the time you spend at home with the time you have to put in at work, assessing aptitude for career planning, and coaching literacy. Okay, I guess you guys can sit down. Thank you. Thank you. Up to you, you work at these shelters. Women's Transitional Living Center, that's an emergency shelter for children and women who are victims of domestic violence and trafficking, as in slavery, guys. FICE, that's Fullerton Interfaith Emergency Services, runs two shelters that most of you have been involved in at one point or the other. And there's New Vista for families, and the Interfaith Shelter Network for adults without children. The Interfaith Shelter Network is the bunch that sleeps on cots in the churches. They live at one church for a couple of weeks, then they move the cots to another church for a couple of weeks. They stay here in our church. These are people that we work with trying to help them find jobs. His house is a shelter in Placentia. That's a short and long-term transitional family that where we work. Thomas House is a transitional family shelter in Garden Grove. We work there. And a new shelter that we are supporting in Midway City, because we have a UU volunteer who lives there, doesn't have to drive a long way. That is American Family Housing, a transitional family shelter in Midway City. Okay, I did want to take this time also to say that we do benefit from shared treasure in this congregation. A really big example is the career hotline phone that we operate. There's a hotline cell phone that the church bought last year, and Steve Schuster funded. I want to acknowledge him for that. This year, the Social Action Committee has taken on the cost of that cell phone hotline. We're going to call it the Bill Pryor Memorial Career Hotline, because Bill Pryor spent the last few months of his life supporting Up to UU. We want to do that in his memory this year. And thank you to the Social Action Committee for that. So if you want to help Up to UU with your time and talent, we need your help attaching a resume to an email message, filling out an online application. Those take 45 minutes to an hour, each one. And the clients need a little support sometimes with the writing and just more support getting through the online application. You have to do an online application out of work at Target or anywhere else, pretty much. So we can use your help. Sometimes we can only do one or two of those a week for shortage of volunteers to help. So we could really use some help with that. I'll train you. We'll train. We could use some help looking up answers in the back of a GED textbook. That's what we do. We sit with the clients and and we read the lesson with them, and we try to work through the exercises, and when we don't know the answer, we look it up in the back of the book. And in this way, someone can finish high school and double their income. They can double the amount of pay they get if they finish high school, and they have access to jobs that are otherwise just plain closed. So we'll train if you're interested. As for treasure, if you help us any more with treasure, up to you, these are some of the things we would likely do with it in the coming year. We'll put up a website so that other congregations can use the materials we've been developing the last few years and start their own programs like this around the country. We can do this for $10 a month. That's what it costs to post a website. We might get some bus passes so that we can go back into a shelter where we left because of the when gasoline went up to $4 a gallon, we pulled back from Paloma House and Garden Grove and told them we'll try to come back when we have more means, financial means. But we could buy bus passes for the 10 women that live there, and they can come up here to us volunteers. We could get some folding chairs to go around the new computer lab that we hear may be opening for us at New Vista. We could buy a catalog of employers who will hire ex-offenders. You know, no matter how you feel about that, ex-offenders are a lot of times their parents. And if they find work, well, it's not only to their benefit, but to the benefit of their children and all of us, really. They're working. All right, so now I guess I'd like to introduce Jennifer. Please, Jennifer, if you come up. As I said earlier, Jennifer and her family were not so much the recipients of Up to You Time and Talent, but they have benefited from our treasure. When they came into the shelter, Richard was employed, and Jennifer got a job right away. They have mentioned that they learned something about networking to find work. And keeping that in mind, Richard mentioned that he does tiling work. So if anybody, that's his networking effort since he spoke up with that. He learned something from our life skills class, and we want to mention that. Jennifer and Richard and their little boy Gabriel, who's downstairs with some of the children, they moved into New Vista and got on their feet right away and got their own place. And they are back living at New Vista now, but now they're back as staff. So, you know, they went out, got their own jobs, got their own place to live, but New Vista called them back, and now they work as resident managers there. Someone has to be there at night when the staff goes home. So now I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer finally, and we'll have questions and answers after.
I want to thank you guys so much for giving me this opportunity to come and share my story with you. I was born and raised in Ventura, California. My childhood was very difficult for me. My dad has always been an addict, and my mom, she was very emotionally abusive towards me and my brother. She always worked two or three jobs, so she was never around. All I really had growing up was my brother, and he was 2 years older than me, and you know kids, of course, were going to fight, so like brothers and sisters do. I was washing my own clothes and making my own food by 8 years old. I moved a lot. We never had stability. I never even really had a sense of family. My dad, because he was an addict, was not financially able to support me. So that was the reason for me staying with my mom and putting up with what she had put me through. By the time I was 10, My mom had a breakdown and dropped me off at my grandmother's house. And I'll always remember her last words. She said, "I'm done." And at that time, because I was only 10, of course, my first thoughts were, why doesn't my mom love me anymore? What could I have done better, you know, to make her happy? And thinking back, I know now that that was the best thing she could have ever done for me. I was going to experience an unconditional love from my grandmother that I didn't have with her. And I stayed with her for about 2 years. I started doing really well. I became a straight-A student. I had lots of friends all the time. I was really popular in a healthy way. And my refrigerator was always full of food, which was really good. I even had the opportunity to start another relationship with my dad. He moved into my grandma's garage soon after. So it was good. I was there for a couple of years, and by the time I was 12, my dad had a job. And even though he was still an addict, he is what you call a functioning addict. So he was able to still provide for us at that point. And he rented a room in a house and took me and my brother with him. And, you know, I learned a really valuable lesson from my grandmother while being there. She says, it doesn't matter what you have as long as you have your family. That's all that matters. So I didn't mind living in this little room with my dad and my brother. I was okay with it. I was just excited, you know. I was with my dad. Things were going to be good. And little did I know. That was when the path to destruction in my life began. I was really mature for my age because I grew up. I didn't have a childhood. I didn't play with Barbies. I, you know, didn't color in coloring books. I wasn't active in Girl Scouts, you know. I grew up really fast. The friends I chose at this point were older, so I started missing a lot of school because I didn't have anybody tell me otherwise. I didn't have that guidance that, you know, a lot of kids have with their parents. I just basically did what I wanted to. And it didn't take long until we were evicted from that house because my dad's addiction, again, showed to be more important than rent or food. So we bounced from one room to another, running from his friends and other people he found in a penny saver. It was really stressful for him, and I know it was, because I could see it in his face every day, having me and my brother. But his ego would not allow him to give us back to my grandma. So because my life was so chaotic with him, I stayed with my friends as much as I could. It was like my escape. And they weren't the best of people, but that was my escape. And so when I was 12, I tried my first drug. My drug of choice was meth. Unlike most people who start off drinking and smoke a little bit of marijuana, that wasn't my path. My path was straight to meth. And that night that I tried that first drug, I felt on top of the world. I felt invincible. I was like, this is so much fun. I was with my friends. We were having a good time. Life was nothing but a party, you know. And the next 9 years of my life from that point on was the longest roller coaster I have ever been on. I went to school when I felt like it. I slowly started seeing my mom during this point because she wanted to make up for what she had done, and her way of doing that was, hey, you guys can come live with me again, and, you know, I can take care of you, and I have an apartment, and I can buy this and this. And so we moved back in with her, my brother and I, and this was when she decided she wanted to be a mom. And by this point, I was already gone. So I was like, this woman who dropped me off at my grandmother's house, now these years later, after I've been doing what I've been wanting to do for so long, wants to be my mom? No, that's not going to happen. So we butted heads a lot. And it was difficult for me. What I would do was, when I was mad at my mom or when we would have our arguments, I would go and stay with my dad. And then when I would get tired or hungry or just wanted to sleep, because I'd been up so many nights partying and using drugs, I would go back to my mom's to sleep. And that was pretty much what I did until I was about 14. And then I experienced one of the hardest things in my life. One morning I'd gotten up and said, I'm going to go to school today. And, you know, I had a really good day. And, I don't know, something was just good inside me. And I remember I was running home to tell my mom that, hey, I went to school today all by myself. And, you know, I was proud of myself. And I opened the front door, and she's gone. There was nothing left in that apartment. There was not a couch, not a dish in the cupboard. There was nothing. She was gone. Not a word telling me, hey, you know, I'm done again. I give up. At least something would have made me feel better. But it was nothing. It was gone. She decided to move away with her boyfriend and left me and my brother there. I was 14, and I couldn't go back to school. What was I going to do? How was I going to support myself? I didn't want to go with my dad. I gave up that day. And my drug use got really heavy. I did what I had to make money. I started dancing at a strip bar at 14. I had to do what I had to do to take care of myself. And I started a relationship with a very abusive man. He, in 1 year, managed to manipulate me, abuse me, use me for his own selfish needs. I was so empty inside by the time this year was up with him, and I just did not care. I didn't care if I died. I didn't care what happened to anybody around me, who I hurt. It just didn't matter anymore. And one night, being with my ex, I met Richard. And I had heard so much about him, that he was this crazy guy from East LA, and he was a gangster, you know, all that stuff. And I was a little bit nervous, but I didn't show it on my face because, you know, I'm really tough, right? And it wasn't long till I formed a really good friendship with him. And, he saved me from that relationship. I told myself I wasn't going to do this. If I hadn't met him, I would have died. I fell in love with him. He made me feel good about myself. You know, he showed me I was worth loving. That I'm a person that matters in this world. And for the first time, I felt really safe in a long time. He did use drugs. But it wasn't how I had experienced from when I was 12 to 15. It was different. I know it might sound a little bit crazy to you guys, but it wasn't the same lifestyle. I still had a home to come home to. I still had somebody that would have done anything for me. And of course, both of us in our addiction, the one thing we didn't do was stop using drugs. And so things started changing after a while. I was a very jealous person, arguing about women who he would have come over. And it ended up, again, with me being alone, waiting for him to come home. But I loved him so much that I thought I could change him. I'm like, you know, I could stop using drugs and I can change this man. And he could be that person that made me feel the day I met him. And that was the day I made the decision to live or die with him. And then after a while of moving, you know, house to house, because we moved out of his apartment, living the drug life, We came to Orange County. We've been with each other for a couple years by now. We were using drugs every day. Always looking for what we could do to get that next high. Both him and I eventually went to jail and got out and went back again and got out. And just repeated the same story over and over and over again. We were offered Prop 36. We were offered drug court. Didn't do any of it. We chose to get high. I remember the last day I ever used drugs. June 23rd, 2006 was the last day I got high. That was the day we got arrested. That was our last arrest. By this point, we were living in motel rooms, selling drugs, using whoever we had to get whatever we needed. It was God that day that brought us to jail that day. I know he was ready to stop, but me, my big issue was, okay, fine, you know, we could stop using drugs, but I don't want to go to a program because I was so scared he was going to leave me. I thought that was his plot to leave me because I have such abandonment issues. So we didn't get help, and it took that last arrest. I knew something was different that day when I got arrested. It wasn't how I felt on the other arrest. Like, oh my God, I gotta go through this again. Something was different inside of me. I didn't know what it was. I just knew something was different. I remember sitting in the back of the cop car on our way to county jail again. And a car pulled up beside us. And he asked the police officer, hey, any directions on how to get to this place? And I'll always remember when Richard looked at me and said, I want to be able to do that. Something as simple as asking an officer for directions, you know? It was then that I realized that I was done. I wasn't going to live this lifestyle anymore. I wasn't going to subject myself to that abuse anymore. I was going to grow up. So we went to jail, you know, said I love yous in the back of the car and kissed and went our separate ways. And I got 6 months. And the funniest part of it was me sitting in that cell for 22 hours a day, really alone, I didn't feel it. I felt closer to him than I had been when we were physically together. Because I had him in my heart, and it was healthy, and that was when I found out I was pregnant with Gabriel, so I really made sure that I did what I had to do to get help for my addiction. After I got out, I went to the Heritage House, which is a drug treatment program for women with kids. They worked a very intense program with me, 8 hours a day, programming. They make you work your first 3 steps. It's an intense program, but it's for those who are willing to change. And if you're willing to change and do what you have to, it doesn't matter what you need to do. You're going to do it, you know. And my motivation was every time I would feel my son move in my stomach. And I was not going to be the mom that I had. So after that intense program, I graduated. While there, Richard got out of jail, and he went to the Phoenix House and completed his program there. So we both individually got the help we needed, which, when we were done, led us to New Vista. Because we got that individual help, and we were able to set the road that we needed to in recovery, it made it that much easier for us to be together again. And that's when we came to New Vista. This place blew me away. What they did for us was just amazing. See, I had the skills to live in recovery. I had the skills to be sober every day. What I didn't have was the skills of how to live. I didn't know how to budget my money. I didn't know a lot of things about being a mom. While being there, I had 30 days to find a job. And I didn't have anybody to show me the ropes on how to do it. I just was like, oh, I have a felony on my record. What am I going to do? Nobody's going to hire me, you know? My first sober job. And while there, New Vista helped us with childcare. If I hadn't had New Vista to help us with childcare and we were trying to do this alone, I would have had to pay $210 a week for my son. That was almost what I made, you know? And what he had would have been what we had to live on. And they really helped us a lot. Like I said, budgeting so we could live responsibly. We got help with food, diapers, clothes. The essentials that cost a good amount of money, they provided for us. By the time about while being there, they have life skills meetings, which Kathy comes and on Wednesdays, and those meetings are very essential. It teaches anything from how to be a mom to resources that are out there, you know, different programs that can help you. They get really involved in your life, and they really want to show you how to do this. They want to show you that you're able to do this. And they don't give up. You know, as long as you want this, they don't give up. And we wanted it so bad that we were actually the first client to ever get a 3-month extension. It was a new program that, or a new add-on to their program, was to get a 3-month extension, so you would have a total of 6 months to be there. And we got it. And Christmas time is just amazing. We were able to experience that there. They had gifts for all of us. My son was adopted for Christmas. There was a family who provided dinner for us, who brought him stuff that we wouldn't have been able to afford had it not been for this place. I remember when we left New Vista, I remember I got my first Christmas tree with him. It was pretty cool. I got to decorate my first Christmas tree. It was awesome. But anyway, I was like a sponge in New Vista. I just sucked up any information they could give me, you know, because everything was really valuable to me. And it was just something I held in my heart because this is what I needed. To be an adult, to be a mom, to be a human in society, I needed this information. I built lasting relationships that I still have, even with those who are not with New Vista anymore, some of the staff, I still have relationships with them. They really did what they could for me and my family, and I am so thankful for that. By the time we left there, we had enough money saved up to get our own place, to provide for my son. I even had the skills to find a better job, which I did, and now I do medical billing for a doctor. I love my job. My son is just amazing. Richard is my best friend. And we are not one of those statistics that didn't make it. We're one of those ones that did. And I really thank New Vista for everything that they taught us, because they really gave us that motivation to be who we are in the world today. So, that's the story. Thank you.
And now we have time for your questions or comments, and I'll bring the other microphone to you.
You know, for some people, it takes somebody else to do it for them. And then there's people who, inside, on the outside, you're drug addicted, dirty, tired, hungry, and on the inside, you feel like you have no soul. And it's that particular moment in your life that you decide, enough is enough. I'm done. I am not going to use one more drug I am so hungry and so tired that I don't want to fight anymore. You know, I don't want to fight for my next meal. I don't want to fight for my next high. I don't want to fight for a roof over our head. I don't want to fight with him anymore. You know, I want to be better, and I want better for myself. And I think when he looked at me and said, I want to be able to do that, something, like I said, as simple as asking an officer for directions, really sparked something in my mind. It wasn't about me feeling abandoned anymore. It was that I loved him that much, too, to stop, because I know he wanted it that bad, too. So it was kind of a mixture of everything for me in that moment.
I was using drugs over 20 years. It started when I was in high school. Yeah, I went to La Puente High. And I was a football player at the time when I was a freshman in high school. Jennifer's addiction was different from mine. Mine started gradually from drinking alcohol and smoking a little bit of marijuana and once in a while, you know. It wasn't until I was about, I'd say, 23 years of age is when I started using methamphetamine, and that's when my life took a turn for the worse. Actually, I started off using cocaine at the time. It started off as a weekly thing, once a week, and eventually, you know, I didn't know it at the time that I was becoming addicted to this drug, you know. It's a real, how do you say it? I mean, you don't even know that it's happening to you at the time, you know. It's just a lot of fun. You get a lot of energy to do a lot of things, and it's a crafty drug, you know. And that was the beginning of my addiction. Cocaine was a very expensive drug at the time. I spent a lot of money. I lost a lot of things, you know. Couldn't pay my bills. Couldn't keep a job, you know. I kind of moving forward because I don't have that much time. But I mean, as for I got introduced to methamphetamine, and it ruined my life. I wasted a lot of years. You know, I did a lot of bad things, hurt a lot of people, hurt myself, hurt my family, hurt Jennifer. You know, I was a really mean person. Active in the gang member stuff, you know. Running from the law, running from everything. Everything that had to do with illegal, anything illegal and bad, I did it. It's a tough life to live. Like Jennifer said, you know, you can't even talk to a police officer to ask directions because you're on drugs. You're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, and it gets tiring after a while. It did for me. You know, she said that I wanted to quit drugs right before we got arrested, and that's true. I was tired. I was already tired. I knew I was going to die. It went from snorting to shooting it in my veins. You know, and that's like the end of the road, you know, for a lot of people. But I was in drug treatment before. I did maybe 3 times or 4 times in drug treatment programs because I got arrested. But it was only for the courts, you know, because they told me I had to do this. You know, and there was a choice, either stay in jail or go to prison or do a drug treatment program. So I chose the drug treatment program. I wasn't stupid. I didn't want to go to prison, you know. So that's the difference, you know. When you go into a drug treatment program for something else or someone else, it's not going to work for you. It has to be for yourself. You have to hit rock bottom. You have to want to make that change in your life. And that's what I wanted to do. But it took a lot, you know, a lot of suffering and pain. And I hated it at that time. You know, going out every day to find the money, no matter how you get it, you know, to get high. And it's just so bad. It was tiring. I was tired. So, I God works in mysterious ways. He put us in jail that day. And that's what it took for me.
God.
It took for me to realize, and this is my chance to save my life. And, I was worried for Jennifer, too. I loved her. But this was my life that I was thinking about and talking about, you know. And it kind of sounds selfish, but that's the way it has to be. You know, I went to the Phoenix House program while I was incarcerated. I chose to do this. Nobody made me do it. And I did 3 months while I was incarcerated. And then when I got out, I did another 6 months in-house program. So that's what I did for myself.